from PRX.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and friends beyond the binary, it's getting lulled in here, so let me take the things off your mind. I am getting so sleepy. I'm going to put you to sleep. It's time for Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. And if you could just listen for the next few minutes, if you're a regular listener, until the credits, it would be a huge help. That's the way we keep the show going. Otherwise, when your hand hits the fridge tomorrow, just go to our website, sleepwithmepodcast.com, to check out all the details on how we keep the show going. All right, but this is Scoots here. This is where I ask you to, hey, if you think about signing up for Sleep With Me Plus at sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus, with just a few questions. If you're new to the show, just ignore this message. Or if you only listen to Sleep With Me occasionally, or it could be easily replaced by another show, not important. Do you listen to Sleep With Me regularly? Yes. But yeah, does it improve your life in any way at all? And would you miss Sleep With Me if we stopped making it? How much would you be willing to give on an annual basis or a monthly basis to say, hey, go ahead, start that podcast back up? So this is a way of not doing that. I'm asking, if the answer to those questions are yes, yeah, you're a regular listener. Yes, Sleep With Me improves your life. Yes, I could and would pay for the show. If it was missing from my life, I'd pay to get it back. Or if you lost it, you'd say, where has my Sleep With Me podcast gone? Could you help me find it? And this is a reward, whatever, $120. I need my year of Sleep With Me back. Or you would find a way to support the show if you said, now I got to put up a poster. If the answers are yes, I do need, we're kind of in that place right now, and the whole podcasting industry is in that place more or less, where it's like, hey, I really need you to think about supporting the show right now if the answer is yes to those questions. So we don't have to go through, where has my Sleep With Me podcast gone? Because I don't want that. I love making the show. It does take a team of people to make the show. So think about it. sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. If you get a lot out of the show and you'd miss it and you'd say, where has my Sleep With Me podcast gone? Sign up for sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. And I'll thank you. Believe me, I'll send you a video and say thanks. Thanks so much. Hey, everybody, I wanted to talk to you about another amazing new podcast from Night Vale Presents, Adventures in New America. It's a sci-fi, serial, political satire, Afrofuturistic buddy comedy. I mean, which one of those would you like? Because you're going to get all of them in the show. Just a few years in the future, two mismatched African New American best friends have to overcome a lot of odds. There's a lot of action that they face in the wilds of New York City. So make sure to tune in. It's radical reflections on our world and their world. If you enjoyed Sorry to Bother You, the New York Times said it was simpatico with Boots Riley's movie and how it dealt with our current climate. And they also compared it to the kind of social thriller with a lot of other elements that Jordan Peele made with Get Out. So if you enjoyed either of those films or a balance of humor, action, and social critique, you're going to love Adventures in New America. It's Adventures in New America. You can find out more. Just open your podcast app and search Adventures in New America. Yeah, go ahead and do it right now. Or you could go to adventuresinnewamerica.com. Mr. Bart, a lot of great people help out on Sleep With Me. What, can you give me a rundown?
Chris Posty poster some. Sounds like an earful. Wrote the theme song. Edits episodes. Carl W. the legend. Also edits episodes. Kenny, Scotty, and Jennifer. Runner, 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 runner. Eric and the team at Astound are on the website. I am the mystery bar. I do the lullabies, yeah. I do commissions at JonathanMann.net. I'll write a song for you. Any reason at all. You can tell me the story and I'll make it personal. You see the kindness shine straight on through when the listeners form their own Facebook group. Keith, Stacy, Sarah, Laura, Julie, and Jennifer. These are your narrators. Get support, dear Scooter, on Patreon. Buy the merch and support the sponsors. You can find anything you want at sleepwithmepodcast.com.
Thanks, Mystery Bard. I'm at Dear Scooter on Twitter and Instagram, and Twinder, which is Twitter, you know, Tinder for birds, birdwise, you know, it, one day it will be Twinder. I Twinder, why? They all ran away, even the birds. But yeah, let's get on with the show. What do you say? Hey, are you up all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble staying asleep? Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. We do it a bedtime story. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights, and press play. I'm going to do the rest. What I'm going to attempt to do is create a safe place where you could set aside whatever's keeping you awake. Thoughts, feelings, physical sensations, changes in schedule or time, temperature, weather, you know, all those things. Whatever's keeping you up, I'd like to keep you company, bring you in here, say, hey, come on in. It's a welcome place where I'm going to try to teach you to treat you with kindness. No teaching here. Oh boy, I don't know where that slip came from. I mean, I could teach you about this safe place. It's open. You'll be treated with dignity and respect. I mean, I'll do my best to keep you company and to take your mind off of stuff. And the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to send my voice across the deep, dark night. I'm going to use lulling, soothing, creaky, dulcet tones, pointless meanders, superfluous tangents. I'm going to go off the topic. Extra word filler. Oh boy. They say he's the only person that puts filler in his word filler. I mean, I get contacted by the multinationals every once in a while from different things where they say, huh, how's he do that? How do you get so much filler in just a 12-minute intro? And I say, I said, don't you make like an orange flavored drink? What do you need filler for? Isn't water, and they say, it's tough to, you know, believe me, we get it. And I say, remember when fundraisers, we used to have a different, that was all filler. It didn't have any flavor. They simply called it orange drink. They think that whole idea behind that, was to sell more Tang. Cause you say, whoa, boy, this is not Tang. Tang tastes 1,000 times better. So I don't think they could come after me for that, but we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that. If you're new, welcome. Here's a few things. I'm glad you're here. Now, this podcast isn't for everybody, but for most people that it works for, it takes a few tries because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Of course, you're skeptical. Naturally, I'm going to try to put you to sleep, and you say, wait, how are you going to do it? And I say, mostly be myself, and, you know, mess around, work really hard at keeping you company. I'm going to be here. That's really what it is, with my best intentions, because I've been there in the deep, dark night. But give it a few tries. Try to passively consume the podcast at first if you can and like observe it, but in a loose way, and see how it goes. But I'm here to help. No pressure. And those are the other things. No pressure to listen. No pressure to fall asleep. The shows are an hour, so you don't have to listen to them or feel like, holy cow, this thing better work fast. No, it's here for an hour. You could queue up and listen to 300 shows right in a row if you need to. You know, so if you're on some cosmic journey, but first of all, like you would be probably, you know, maybe you're, you've been on a journey. Maybe you have Tang on board, so my Tang jokes would actually make sense to you. I hope that's what that stuff is called. Maybe I'll just go to the store in a little while. See, do you have like the store brand version of that though? I'll compare prices. Don't worry. No, don't worry, corporate headquarters. I'm not really comparing prices. Okay, where was I? I was at the new listener. So no pressure to listen and no pressure to fall asleep. I'm going to be here about an hour to keep you company. You drift off when you feel like it. See if it works. Play another episode. See how it goes. Structurally, what to expect if you're new. The show starts off with a few minutes of business. That's how we keep the podcast free and going and support a lot of the work that goes into it. Then there's an intro, which we're probably like close to halfway through. The intros are usually around 12 minutes. of me trying to introduce what the podcast is to a new listener. But what I've found is it's become a show within a show that also serves a dual purpose. One, hopefully it makes you feel welcome if you're new. But it also, if you're regular, so you say, oh yeah, this is my familiar safe place. A little bit different though. Every intro is different because I know Scooch is going to be there helping, not dialing it in, not replaying, saying, from the stacks of pillows and the wax of dreams, here's the Sleep With Me podcast. Ba-ba-boom. I mean, I could do that. I don't think any sleep podcast has done that, but it maybe, you know, maybe one day, maybe on a planet, you know, the over-caffeinated planet, they say, well, that works for us. Okay, where was I? Oh, don't have to listen. No pressure to fall asleep. I'll be here for about an hour. Oh, structure. So the intros, a lot of people, what they do is they start it up and they get ready for bed. It's part of their bedtime routine. Some people skip the intro. Some people fall asleep during the intro. So those are ways to listen. A lot of people now listen during the day because they say, hey, I need a little break. Some people don't like to listen during the day. They like the Pavlovian thing. That's cool because most of those people support the show. And then the people that listen during the day support the show, too, because they say, hey, when I need a break during the day, I also listen to Scoots. When I need a friend, we all know what the deep, dark day looks like. You know, holy man, you say, put that in a spreadsheet, Dean. Speak just became like an 80s movie somehow. But okay, speaking of 80s movies, that's what we'll be talking about tonight is A Tale of the Tape from a seasonal movie. Which I still figure out how I'm going to talk about it or even the title of it. Oh, I guess, yeah, Dustbusters is the name of the movie. It's a great one. I guess I'll have to put a space or another word. I think Dustbuster is the name of that company. I talked about it on a recent intro when I was talking about my breakdancing names. So structure show. So we'll have an intro. Then we'll have where I talk about indirectly what I can remember about the plot of the movie Dustbusters, the original one. Maybe at some point I'll do the remake, which is a beloved remake with some actresses I find very inspirational and look up to. So, and I think Thor was in it also, and he's really great. But this is about the 80s version. So there'll be an intro, then a little business, and then we'll talk about Dustbusters and the Stay Puft Marshmallow person. They don't even need to be changed. And then we end the show with some thank yous and some good nights. And this is the part of the intro where I try to make a metaphor for what the podcast is based on what was distracting me earlier, which was Tang. And you can still buy this stuff. It's a powdered vitamin C flavored orange drink, I believe. I think the concept was it was like powdered orange juice. And I don't know if it came out in one of the big WWs or it was just a product of like, hey, this is the future. I don't think it's like freeze-dried. I don't know if there's actually any orange in there other than, you know, orange coloring and orange flavoring. I did go through a period where I drank a lot of this when I was in school, when I was in college, because they said I got to get my vitamins. And also when you're in a dorm room, you can drink, you know, you can really only make ramen, you know, when you have one of those kettle things that you plug into the wall. I guess you don't use that for Tang, but those are the other beverages other than the ones I drank too much of. Tang was one of the things I would drink. I'd say, let me have a little Tang. Let me have some room temperature Tang. That'll slake this thirst. And my body was like, oh boy. My body's always been like, how many years I got with you? So Tang is like an orange flavored drink. What I was referring to when I was complimenting Tang, by the way, multinational. I was saying that before that, and I guess this is another company, usually Burger King, in my experience, would furnish this, especially if it was like a seasonal dance in a grammar school or a roller skating party or some sort of fundraiser, there was usually not very many beverages available because this was pre-heyday of soda, where you wouldn't give kids only got to drink soda on special occasions. And so usually you drink, this is just what I drink, but they would have coffee and orange drink. And orange drink came in this big tub labeled with a BK, like a big thermos thing with a spout. You know, you press the button like you see at sporting events and golf courses and things. And it was a drink that was like, if water could be more, it was like watered down water with some sort of sprinkling. Like if it was like a thing of Tang is like 1 tablespoon to 12 ounces of water. And if you're familiar with Tang or orange juice, it would be another thing. This would be like 1 tablespoon of Tang to 30 gallons of water, or like a tablespoon of orange juice mixed with like 10 gallons of water. And I'm not kidding. They would serve this. They'd probably sell it for like 25, 50 cents, maybe 10 cents. That's what it's probably worth. And it was called orange drink. They didn't even bother. They said, well, would you like some orange drink? I guess when people say there were simpler times, they were simpler, but I think they were simpler for a reason. You say, really, you became creative enough to make a silly podcast and you lived in a time where there was orange drink. And you didn't, I mean, maybe I did do a routine back. What are you selling, orange drink? Can you think of something more snazzy for it? Hey, Teach, want you a little put, you know, the orange drink or something. The orange drink, what is it? ? Mostly water, I think I got at the end of my orange drink material. But orange drink was similar to Tang. I guess that's my whole point. And this is kind of like similar. Like if there's like brand name podcasts, right? You know, you got Criminal, you got 99PI, you got Night Vale, you got Lore, you got MFM, you got Radio Lab. You know, you got all these brand, you know, you see it was Serial, you know, you got them all. And more, of course, to the other ones, the other great ones that I'm forgetting. But then you say, well, what if you took that and watered it down? You say, well, that's one part twist, you know, one part plot point. You know, you got emotional journey in there. You got witticisms and witty stuff, twists to turns, sound design, you know, thoughtful questions, interviews. You know, window into the human condition. These are a few of the things that might make up some of those shows. You know, observations on the, did I say windows, observations, you know, funny people. You say, okay, well, those are all one, you know, whatever. Some of their parts are greater than their holes. Now, this one is mostly holes and watered down orange drink. That's what this podcast, because then you say, well, I don't, you know, a thimble, whatever they used to sell it for 50 cents, it was in like a Dixie cup. That was for another intro. They used to convince people, they'd say, hey, you need these paper shot-sized cups for your bathroom. That's what all, you know, are you an aspirational middle-class person in the U.S.? Then you need these cups for your restroom. They're going to show that you're ready for the big time. They're called Dixie cups. And, I'm bringing some people back, I think. But that's what you would do. You'd say, well, that's enough. A Dixie cup of orange drink, that's enough for me. I don't think it was ever said, I mean, unless you were really thirsty, like you were really doing some roller skating at the roller skating party, where you'd say, holy cow, I got to get another orange drink. I'm like, I'm thirsty here. They'd say, okay, it's just reached room temperature, so here you go. And this podcast is a bit like that, I think. It's watered down, but it's a familiar flavor. It's based in and inspired by something you love. And it's here for you, not to drink or consume, but to be here as you drift off, to slake those thoughts that are keeping you awake, to say, hey, well, you could listen to Scoots. And some of you, across the globe and across the time spectrum of ages, will be like, what in the, what's a Tang? And what's a, probably, what's an orange drink? Also, Scoots, that was called tong, just so you know. And daisy cups. Of course, I was referring to daisy cups and tong the whole time, not those other things I accidentally said. That was totally a mix-up, whatever other words I may have accidentally used in this podcast. But anyway, I'm here to help. I'm here to keep you company, to barely make you smile. Just like when you spill an orange drink, that probably would be, you'd say. You wouldn't barely smile, but you'd say, this barely tastes like orange. It's a drink that's kind of orange. Anyway, I'm here to help. I work very hard because I strive and I yearn to help you fall asleep. Thank you again for coming by. And here's a couple of ways we keep this show going. Sleep With Me is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. All right, so we're doing another Tale of the Tape episode. This will be like a 50% Tale of the Tape, I think, and then 50% maybe some facts and stuff, some lists I looked up related to this movie. Yeah, this is a movie that came out in 1984, so I did not see it in the movie theater. I was not of age to see movies in the movie theater at all, especially this. I don't know what it was rated. And it was released, it was a strange thing for a movie. It's released under a few different titles, depending where, even like, and some people say, well, Scoots, this might be just memory, you're misremembering. But the two titles I remember, the most famous one that I identify with is it was a 1984 movie called Dustbusters with an S. And I think there was like, they said, well, this isn't a branding thing. I don't know if the product came after it, but that was just a Dustbuster, which I talked about. There was also another copyrighted name. So this is probably why I didn't catch it. It was called Casper Catchers. And there may have been a third title that I'm not remembering clearly, but one I remember the most is Dustbusters. And it had a famous title song, Dustbusters, by Ray Parker Jr., which was a hit, which we'll look into that later. So also associated, had a cool, no, okay, so what's a Dustbuster? Well, this is like a movie that almost invented it, or it was like something considered fringe. It's a comedy, 1984 comedy. Oh, and this is a Tale of the Tape episode, this part, so I'll try to remember the movie plot and talk about my personal experience with it, and then we'll get into some facts. So I remember the movie because it was very well marketed. I don't remember if it was a summer or winter movie, though I'm guessing it was a summer movie, and I'm pretty sure it was a gigantic hit, and it swept the nation with, the people singing the song, Dustbusters. I was probably first exposed to it through the music video for the song Dustbusters. And then there was another kind of pop song towards the end of the movie, which I'm not remembering now. And I don't know if that pop song was in other movies. So this is a movie, and it starts off, it's the tale of three friends who become dust, who invent, and I'm saying that, and you know, it's a fictional movie, invent the concept of dust busting. And not like in a, it'll make all sense. You see, well, this isn't that a cleaner? No. We're talking about something much more. But first, let's get to kind. So it's a. I guess it's a high concept comedy. But it features Ray, Egon, in the third person. Ray Stance, Egon, and Mike. No, I don't know Bill Murray, but I don't know Bill Murray's character off the top of my head. I'll think of it. Venkman, Peter Venkman. Thank you, brain. That was my index finger that I was squeezing that out of. I'm not kidding. I said, not hard. I say, well, let me put a little pressure on my index finger. My middle finger, Ray stance, and my ring finger says Egon. And then later, they would have another character who joins them. But it starts off with the three of them. Initially, I believe the first character we get introduced to is Bill Murray's character, who, well, maybe I should talk about my personal relationship with the movie first, but the movie starts off with, who is it, Ray Stantz? I forgot his name already. Peter Venkman. I think that's who it starts off with. But so I didn't see this movie in the theater. Maybe I saw it in 1986 or 80, probably in 86, whenever it came out on, what do you call that, what's that thing called? HBO. I may have seen the sequel in the movie theater, but even that, I can't be sure. I probably did. And it was just remade, I think a few years ago now, 86. There was a remake of Dustbusters. One day we'll talk about that. But this is like a tale of the tape to try to get me back into what do I remember. So I remember seeing it and being delighted. It's a delightful movie. And, so I guess that's my basic. I'm sure I saw it on HBO. That would have been the only way I would have seen it. And as we'll see, 1984 was like a very good year for popular things, at least in my opinion. I guess because I was too young to consume a lot of this stuff. It was stuff that I thought was cool. So Dustbusters, it starts off with, what's his name again? Peter Venkman, I believe. And he's not exactly the most sympathetic hero. And especially through today's lens, you'd say he's kind of like a jerk, I'd say. But he's like working in some sort of college or university. And he's testing out his concepts of sentient dust motes and sympathetic vibrations and stuff. So he's giving these two college students, one of whom would be in she would be in a 1984 film, The Karate Kid. Yeah, but not important right now. But he's giving these two students these tests about parasympathetic vibrations, parapsychology, I think, is one of his degrees. And he's also kind of just like, you say, well, I'm not sure about this Peter Venkman. He's kind of like a bit of a, I don't know, you say, I'm not so sure about him. Then at some point, Ray Stantz, he's played by Bill Murray. And he is like a bit of a wisecracker, a trickster hero, I would say. Then Ray Stantz comes in, and Ray is he kind of plays his character two different ways. For the most part, Ray's kind of like a bit not as on the ball as Peter Venkman, like a bit childish, a bit like Scoots. But every once in a while, you kind of get insight to a deeper, at least in the comedy side of him. And he's played by Dan Aykroyd. And he comes in, and I think he says big news. He says something like, big news. I got big news. Either they got a grant or they got a, oh no, I think they got to go to the library. I think is this that early? He says, we got to go down to the library. Egon's got us a sentient dust mode. So then if you went into the movie and you didn't know the title, it might even have been more enjoyable, or if you didn't know anything about it, because you'd say, wait a second, there's sentient dust motes. I thought that was just a fringe theory I put forth on one episode of Sleep With Me podcast. And I'd say, no, this is like a wide-ranging fringe theory. So you say there's these, what a better place would have a lot of dust motes. Oh, it takes place in New York City. So this is at the main branch of the New York Public Library, which is featured prominently throughout the movie, New York City. And it's probably one of the reasons I moved there, because it's portrayed in a grand scale fashion, and is kind of a character in the movie, like not a huge, like, yeah, a bit of a character in the movie. But so they head to the library where Egon's waiting, and Egon's like listening to a table or something, because they say, well, what place is it? More places filled with dust motes than portions of a library. And they say these dust motes have gone sentient and are behaving even anthropomorphic, even. And just like you think, most people say this idea is ridiculous. But these three are into it, or at least Ray and Egon are into it. And Peter's kind of their friend and a little bit of like a capitalizing, I mean, in an indirect way. Though I think he believes in it because he's studying these parasympathetic vibrations. So they go down to where they go to the library. They start looking in. One of the librarians has seen an a sentient, like a dust mote in a human, taking human form to try to communicate. And she says, holy cow, gave me, you know, the sneezes. And they say, she said, well, it's floating. You know, it was a dust mote. And they say, well, that's what dust motes do best, is float or drift. So they go down there and you see, okay, this is an investigative movie, maybe. So they're investigating the sentient dust motes, which leaves residues and things, as dust motes do, especially as it becomes more concentrated. Then they encounter the dust mote. They get the sneezes, so they say, it's so sneezy, we got to get out of here. And I'm pretty sure, like, after that, so we see, okay, we've seen, not just through their eyes, but through our own eyes, that the sentience of dust motes. We've also seen through other characters' eyes. And then we go back to university, and they're fired, I think, is the next thing that happens, is they say, the university says, you lost your grants, you're all fired. This is a fringe theory. There is no dust, you know, there is no sentient dust motes. And I think, let's see, after that, I think there's like a scene with Ray and Peter talking, and right after they get fired, what are we going to do? And Peter's like, well, we got, the world's our oyster now. It's going to be okay. But Ray, you know, Peter's been an academic his whole life, where Ray's like, I've worked in the real world. It's not for me. And at some point, Peter comes up with the idea. I don't know if it's right here. There's a lot of well-done montages in this movie. But so at some point, they come up with it. He says, okay, what about dust busting? And they say, we could do this as a job or something like that. As a business, we could make money. I think it's when the idea of making money initially gets Peter Venkman's attention. And Ray and Egon are in it for the love conceptually exploring the idea of sentient dust motes. And that there's a variety of them, because there's a variety of dust, there's a variety of moting, there's emoting, there's demoting, you know, there's floating. And so then I think starts, I don't know if it's a musical montage, maybe it's just a series of shots or quick scenes. They borrow the money, third mortgage on Ray's house. They rent a old firehouse. This is in 1980s New York, so it's a little bit more like pictured in a rundown way. The firehouse, we see more of Ray's childhood tendencies. They rent an old-fashioned ambulance to use to get, then they're getting their equipment, their uniforms, in that thing, in those series of shots. Then they're running a television commercial. They're hiring Annie Potts. I'm not sure Annie Potts' character, or if I'll remember it. They say, okay, then they get their first job. You think this is how it happens. Now, meanwhile, somewhere interspersed in here is Sigourney Weaver's character and Rick Moranis' character. Two unrelated, for now, New Yorkers. Rick Moranis' character is an accountant who lives on the same floor in the same apartment building as Sigourney Weaver's character, who is a cellist in I guess the New York Philharmonic, because we see shots at Lincoln Center. And I think she's a cellist. She could be a bassist in a jazz band. You know, she could just be a busker, but I think she's a cellist in the Philharmonic. And what are those characters' names? That's a great question. Dana and Lewis, I think, yeah. Rick Moranis' character. He's an interesting, it's really well portrayed because it has some nuance to it, because he's kind of a little bit geeky, but he's terribly outgoing. And I mean in a positive way, terribly positively outgoing, like having parties, talking to Dana. I think there may be a crush there, like he may have a crush on her, but it's not portrayed in a sloppy way. It's like, oh, maybe he's just super friendly. And she seems to be more introverted. I mean, that could be one way to read it. It's just he's an extrovert, she's an introvert, and he's always trying to get her to hang. I think that is more it, because it didn't really have the flavor of romance to me. And she's like, you know what, I just want to go in my apartment and hang with myself. And she actually sees the ad for the Dustbusters at some point. So that's one, B-plot or whatever. It's not, because it intersects pretty quick. But then we also see that they're not getting any jobs. They're running out of cash. Annie Potts is fed up with them. Then they get their first big job at a fancy hotel in New York. I'm not sure if it was a Plaza or what, but an old money New York hotel. Where they go, and they go, not only do we have a giant dust mote to bust, but it's one that's like picked up, it's got like a goo, it's a goopy one. So they say, don't worry about it. We're going to bust this dust. Back off, man. I'm a dust buster. I think they say, back off. I'm a scientist. Though there was license plates you could get in Lucky Charms or Sugar Smacks. That said, back off me, man. I'm a dust buster. But so what happens? What happens next? They bust this dust. Slimer, it becomes the nickname of this one. And this character would become a main character in their cartoon and in the toys, like a small part, but really whatever actor was portraying this slimy dust mote. In really advanced special effects, because it looked real. You say that looks like real slimy dust mote, personified even. They end up like making a big mess at this hotel, but they get it done. And at first the hotel doesn't want to pay. They say, hey, we can leave the dust behind, man. It's sentient, by the way. They say no. So we see that they kind of catch the dust in these electronic dust catchers. We also get exposition that they have these giant dust collecting beams, like laser proton packs on their backs. That's from Ghostbusters 2. That's a Bobby Brown song. But they still did have proton packs on their backs to bust the dust. Like, I think that maybe, I don't know if it was like ionization or magnetism. I don't know that stuff. But so they do that. So Egan says when they're first using, this is the first time they're using their equipment, he says, don't cross the streams, because if you do, it'll reverse all, you'll be de-atomized. So whatever you do, don't do that. And they say, okay. And he says, remember that for the rest of the movie. They say, got it. Bust the dust, but don't cross the streams. But they end up getting that dust busted or whatever. They clear out the hotel. They go back. They have a place to store the sentient dust motes. The ethics of that is never discussed. But since I watched all that, a good place, I was like, ethically, what is it? You know, whom do we owe? I would say. That doesn't come up. But so what else? So there's that. Okay. Now then there's Sigourney Weaver's character, Dana, right? She goes home from shopping. And she realizes, like, that there's hints of a dust mote in her apartment. There's strange things, you know, dust residue, dust whispers is another thing. When they say dust on the wind and they sang that song, they meant it. That was probably about the whole, you know, dust mote thing. But she thinks, is there dust in my apartment, dust motes, or sentient dust motes becoming personified? And she's kind of skeptical, but this is like barely to be denied, because she opens her fridge and this dust mote is like doing some routine about the Gozers, and saying, do you know the Gozers from Fraggle Rock? They're coming, like, we're going to work with the Gozers. They're going to construct a world for dust motes to live. And she says, well, that's strange. I better call these Dustbusters. And actually, she goes in, because then we see kind of Ray, or this is right when they're like, oh boy, we're out of money or whatever. Maybe it's after the first success, but whatever. She goes in, she meets Peter. He goes back, looks into it, but we kind of say, Peter, man, what are you doing? You're supposed to be dust and bust and not being irritating to your customers. What happens after that? Then there's a montage, I think, of the going up, the story of the Dustbusters, success after success after success. And that they keep getting more and more successful, but it does come at a cost. They get tired. And so then at some point they hire Winston, or played by Ernie Hudson Jr., I believe. And they hire Winston, but they're still successful, but they're getting a little haggard. And we start to get this idea that the dust activity is increasing. And I think that's, let's see, I'm trying to think what happens next. If there's like a so they're on their high point, right? And I know what comes when they crest and they start to go down, but I'm trying to think if there's anyone, you know, they're on all the magazine covers, including Omni, which was this cool science magazine I always dreamed of subscribing to. A bit like Wired, but before Wired. I wonder if they could get back issues of that somewhere. But so, let's see. I'm trying to think. So there's the montage. There's even Casey Kasem doing countdowns. Oh, we see that Dana had kind of left things, like, after Peter was kind of like not super professional. She was like, you know what? I'll figure out my dust on my own. She goes, I remained skeptical, or that it was a one-time, you know, event, or it was my imagination, that it was the dust motes. I guess there's two things that happen at the same time. The dust activity is obviously going up, and the Dustbusters are put to their limit. And then bureaucracy gets in the way. In this case, it's the form of the EPA, who says this character, I don't know what his name is, Mr. Jerk, will say. He says, first he goes in with Peter. Peter challenges him. He says, he doesn't have good social skills. So he says, I'd like to see, you know, him and Peter go back and forth. And Peter tricksters him, but in a way that leaves a bad taste in his mouth. He says, I need to know what you're doing, how you're storing the dust and the motes. And also he represents the skeptical viewpoint that dust would be just, people could clean their own dust. There's no such thing as sentient dust motes. That's silly. Just dust motes blowing around and people projecting meaning onto them. So what happens? There must be something in between. There's like, you get to see a little bit of growth in Winston, Ernie Hudson, and him becoming part of the team, and more work, and Ray looking cool, and Egon looking concerned. Yeah, then there's one more scene where, then there's another scene where Ray, no, who's that? Peter kind of makes one more, he says, goes to Dana's work, waits for her when she gets done with practice. He's dancing around in Lincoln Center while other people are roller skating. And he says, come on, like, maybe, he goes, maybe, like, let's hang Netflix. You know, remember when there was Netflix and chill were a thing? That'll be, and he goes, in 20 years, actually, 2014 or 30 years, whatever, how many ever many years. He says, why not do it now? And she says, well, okay. So she says, maybe later. I feel like I'm missing one other segment. But we see then he goes to visit her. The EPA comes and they shut down the power for the dust containment, which causes the dust to shoot all over New York City, sentient dust mote dust. And not just dust, obviously, other things gathered in the dust. So some of the parts are greater than the whole. And that shoots all over New York. And then at the same time, I think that's a triggering event. Dana, she inhales this dust to dust motes, and she like kind of becomes a medium for dust mote communication, as does Lewis. He kind of runs around trying to get away, and he finally gets breathed in the dust, and he becomes the keymaster and the locksmith or something. I can't remember. I think he's the keymaster. He gets brought to Ghostbusters headquarters, I think before the EPA came. And they say, this is weird. We've never seen this. He's like a medium for communication of dust motes. Egon does this. He says, something big's coming. A lot of comedy in here, too. If, you know, obviously, it's not coming across. So we kind of see these pieces of the puzzle of the mystery being unpacked, too. And Ray's trying to understand what is it with the building. Then we see that Dana's also become a medium for dust moting. And he says she's the locksmith. And they say, oh, we've got the keymaster here. So they say, okay, and they live in the same building. So they say, okay, wait a second. This is starting to make sense. That's when the EPA shows up. Then all the dust goes over all over the city. And this kind of slowly leads, you know, the cards start to fall. Like, then all of the, there's a montage of the reverse of the Dustbusters saving the city from sentient dust motes. And we see sentient dust motes, including Slimer and other ones, run around having a great time in a way that's undeniable, that it's like real. Then we have, the Dustbusters themselves are, they get a timeout with serious timeout, but they're still trying to solve the puzzle. They're still on the dust. They're still busting dust. So you have a cute scene where they're trying to unpack the last phases of the mystery. And then they get called to the mayor's office, and there's an extra scene, I guess, to kind of make sense of, say that this is undeniable. You got the mayor's advisors, you got the cardinal or the bishop or something. And everybody's saying, what is happening? There's dust, there's sentient dust motes everywhere, impersonified in anthropomorphic forms and other things. They say, this is not, and he said, the mayor says to them, can you do something about it? And they say, of course we can. We bust dust. You just got to bust the EPA off our backs. And the mayor says, well, I'm not sure. And then Peter, who's the kind of salesperson, says, if we don't succeed, it doesn't matter. But if we do, mayor, you're the hero. And I don't know who played the mayor, but when I first saw the movie, I was positive it was the real mayor of New York City. Now looking back, I think it was just an actor. Because probably that might have been, I don't know if that was when Ed Koch was running in New York or a little bit before. So then we have the final sequence. In this one, it starts off with this victory sequence in a good way. In a really way, the bookends of this sequence are delightful. I can't imagine shooting them. They're all on location in New York with tons and tons of extras. And it's New York celebrating New York and other New Yorkers succeeding and saving New York from sentient dust. So the Ghostbusters are greeted to a hero's welcome as they go back to Dana and Lewis's building, which is where the Gozers are going to come, or the Dozers or whatever. And because the mystery they uncover is that The sentient dust motes are working with dozers from a show called, which are these little construction characters from a show called Fraggle Rock. And they build stuff, and they've, dust motes and the dozers are going to build a world on top of our world for dust motes and dozers to live. It wouldn't leave a lot for us humans, you know. And I can't, Zool's the one in charge of all this, I think. And then also there's a sequence that shows before all this happened, the Keymaster and the Locksmith joining powers to open the doors for Zool. Who fully, Zool's like the foreman of the dozers, I guess, fully embodies Dana. So that happens. So then the Ghostbusters show up. They say, okay, we're going to dust some bust here. And then as they're about to go in the building, there's like a rock and roll thing. And we think that, are the Dustbusters lost? But no, it's just a little playing. And then the crowd's cheering them on. Then they go up to the top of the building, and they have to go up the stairs. So it's really like slowly fed out to us in a good way. And they face off with with Zool, who's Sigourney Weaver, I think. And they say, the dozers are coming. That's it. You're going to lose. And they say, we're going to bust some dust. So they have like a little bit of a duel with the dust busting and her jumping and flipping around. And they're not really effective at stopping. And then Zool says, choose how the dozers are going to come take everything over. What is going to be the one that does the leveling of the earth, you know, of the human stuff so you can build the dozer world on top of it. And they say, you could, whatever you think of. And then they say, Peter's like, clear your minds, then we'll be fine. But Ray thinks of something, and then they play it out for comedy, and it's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, a bit like the Pillsbury Doughboy, but like a 30-foot marshmallow man starts walking through New York, stepping on stuff. It goes to get the Dustbusters. They go, you know, back and forth, and they say, all is lost. You know, this is a part of the movie where heroes rise. They say there's no way to stop this, to bust this dust. It's become a marshmallow person. They have powers greater than dust, sympathetic vibrations, the whole nine yards, and the dozers. And they say, well, what's the only thing we could do that would be where we, you know, we're the heroes? What's the riskiest move we can make? Cross the streams, all four of us. That'll reverse the polarity and magnetize the dust, and the dust will all just drop to the ground, probably, and we could just vacuum it up, or won't work out. Either way, we're probably, you know, it's not going to work out for us, but we're heroes. Bada bing, bada boom, they do it, and it works. All the dust gets, you know, kicked up and then drops down with, like, a whatever, ionic charge or whatever, however those things work. Pre-HEPA filter this time. And they're heroes. First you say, well, are they all right? Where's Dana? Where's Lewis? Everybody's okay. Then they go downstairs to another, the bookend. Another hero's welcome. All the New Yorkers cheering. Really looked like all the actors and actresses were having a great time. And it kind of ends the movie with these great shots of New York and cheering and the car driving. And the two songs play in those different sequences, Dustbusters and, I don't know, Heroes in I can't remember the other song. That's the end of the movie. And I think I've read a lot of stuff about Dustbusters in the past. It was, I'll just go through some stuff. It was directed and produced by Ivan Reitman, written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis, starring them. We know that. Aykroyd originally conceived the project for himself and John Belushi, busting dust through time and space, and Ramis, and he rewrote the script after Belushi visited the big farm. And Raymond also said the original version is not financially practical. It was released June 8th, 1984. Positive reviews, it grossed $242 million in the U.S. and $300 million almost worldwide. It was nominated for Best Visual Effects and Best Original Song. AFI ranked it 28th out of 100 Years of Laughs. It was selected for the preservation of the National Film Registry. And it had different animated series, video games, and the 2016 reboot. Let's see here. The development, we kind of went through. Pre-production, we don't need to casting. John Candy was also in it, possibly. Louis Tully was originally conceived as a conservative man in a business suit to be played by Candy. But Moranis instead portrayed Lewis as a geek. The Dozers were originally supposed to come in the form of Evo Shandor, an unremarkable man in a suit played by Paul Rubens. But that ultimately went to Slavita Jovan and the voice provided by Patty Edwards. According to Ernie Hudson, an earlier version of the script had his character in a larger role with an elaborate backstory as part of the Air Force. He was excited and took the job for half his usual salary, but his role was reduced because Reitman said the studio wanted to expand Murray's role. He was a little bit let down. I think he was a great character. He added a lot of humanity and excitement from the outside. And actually, he's like, he plays this key thing with the mayor because he says this stuff's real. So he speaks for the audience. It was filmed in Manhattan in October 1983 at Columbia. They didn't want to be identified at Irving Bank in Tribeca, 55 Central Park West, other Manhattan, New York Public Library, Columbus Circle, Waldorf Astoria Hotel, Tavern on the Green. Locals didn't like it, but they had one night to dress the street in one neighborhood. So there was a lot of people that weren't happy. Aykroyd ran into science fiction writer Isaac Asimov, who Aykroyd idolized, and Asimov was not happy about the traffic jam. But then they said infectious energy was everywhere. Upbeat vibes seemed to buoy the production schedule, and they finished 2.5 days earlier, which we could kind of see that, like... I think it was a love letter to New York and New Yorkers. When we came down covered in marshmallow, there was crowds. That's like the end of the movie. Some things were filmed in Burbank, Los Angeles Central Library, Biltmore Hotel. So that's it. Critical response was good. Roger Ebert gave it 3.5 stars out of 4. Movie is an exception to the rule that big special effects can ruin a comedy. And it's provided many quotable lines. So that's a little bit about that. I just wanted to look into 1984, though. Because it had it like I was like, oh, what movies came out in 84? Other than this, and it ends up, it was quite a year for film. Here's some of the summer movies. This is from IndieWire. From their staff, June 5th, 2014. Let's see, June 8th, Ronald Reagan went to a London Celtics beat the Lakers, pressure like Petty at the biggest jackpot, time after time. Oh, Dustbusters and Dremlins, another movie about, it's just Dremlins. I don't know. They both came out. That was a week after Once Upon a Time in America, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Fun. Then followed by Karate Kid and Top Secret. So here's their 30. Like Bolero was a Bo Derek movie. I don't know that one. Cannonball Run 2. I definitely saw that on more than a few times on HBO, and I started the late Burt Reynolds. Best Defense, I never heard of that one. Eddie Murphy and Dudley Moore in it. CHUD, I've seen that. I think I've seen that movie. Breakin', I've definitely seen Breakin' 2. Pretty sure I've seen Breakin'. Sheena, that was Tanya Roberts' movie. I'm unfamiliar with Rhinestone. That's Sylvester Stallone. Dolly Parton. Not familiar with that one either. Oxford Blues. I remember, I don't think I saw this one, but I always wanted to. It was a solo vehicle for Rob Lowe, who had just broken out big, trying to win over the woman of his dreams. So Conan, the Buddy Buddy, I definitely saw that also. Because I think Grace Jones was in that, James Earl Jones. I think, or maybe that was the first one. Yeah, but yeah, I definitely saw that. Grandview, USA. I don't know that one. C. Thomas Howell, Patrick Swayze, Jamie Lee Curtis. Star Trek III, Search for Spock. I saw that in the theater probably a couple years later. But that was a classic. Bachelor Party. Before The Hangover and Wedding Crashers, this was a Tom Hanks movie. I definitely saw that because I wasn't supposed to. And Philadelphia Experiment, I don't think I saw that. Beach Street, I don't think I saw that one. That's a breakdancing movie. Then a movie, Starter of Warmth with Drew Barrymore. Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. That was an 84 movie, huh? That's a cult classic. I've seen that quite a few times, but not lately. Dreamscape, A Tightrope, Under the Volcano. So some of these I just don't know. Red Dawn. Oh, boy, did I see that movie a few times. Another classic, Purple Rain. Oh, boy, Muppets Take Manhattan. Now we're talking. Streets of Fire. I don't know what that one is. I don't know that if I've seen that one. The Natural. That was a very famous. The Bounty. I think I read that book. I don't think I've seen the movie. Last Starfighter. Oh boy, that was another one I seen. That was a great one. When I was a kid, Revenge of the Nerds. I would have thought that was like an 82 movie, but definitely, I've seen that movie and love it. 16 Candles, Holy Mackerel, that came out May 4th. Top Secret, I would have thought this came out in like 90. It's a parody of spy movies. I guess I'll have to rewatch it. I really thought it came out much later. But it was made by the Zucker brothers, who made Airplane and a ton of other great movies. Karate Kid came out on June 22nd. Wow. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Fun, which was the first PG-13 movie. Then Dremlins, that's a classic. Dustbusters. And then Once Upon a Time in, America. And this is a Sergio Leone movie. Once Upon a Time in the West is like a pretty much like a Western classic. And I don't think if I've watched this, it's been a long, long, long time. It's headed to Blu-ray, or maybe it came out on Blu-ray already. So definitely worth checking out. Okay, and I just wanted to run, I guess I won't run through the rest of the movies. That's a pretty good list. There's a lot of other great ones. I'll include the link, but listen to this Billboard year-end Hot 100 from 1984. When Doves Cry by Prince, What's Love Got to Do with It, Tina Turner. Say, 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 Paul McCartney, Michael Jackson. Footloose by Kenny Loggins. There is a Spotify playlist for this. I looked it up. Against All Odds, Take a Look at Me Now, Phil Collins. jump Van Halen. Hello, Lionel Richie. Hello, Lionel Richie. Owner of Lonely Heart, yes. Ghostbusters, or Dustbusters by Ray Parker Jr. Karma Chameleon, Culture Club. Missing You, John Waite. All Night Long, Lionel Richie. Let's Hear It for the Boy. That's my karaoke song, for real. That's the song I do in karaoke. It's Denise Williams. Dancing in the Dark, Bruce Springsteen. Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Cyndi Lauper. The Reflex, Duran Duran. Time After Time, Cyndi Lauper. A Jump for My Love, the Pointer Sisters. Talking in Your Sleep. This is the first song I don't know off the top of my head. Self by the Romantics. Self Control by Laura Branigan. Let's Go Crazy by Prince and the Revolution. Say It Isn't So, Hall & Oates. Hold Me Now, Thompson Twins. Joanna, Kool & the Gang. I just called to see, can you believe this? I just called to say I love you, Stevie Wonder. Somebody's Keeping an Eye on Me, Rockwell. Break My Stride, Matthew Wilder. 99 Newfound Balloons or whatever, Nina. I Can Dream About You, Dan Hartman. I don't know that one either. The Glamorous Life by Sheila E. Oh, Sherry, Steve Perry. Stuck on You, Lionel Richie. He had a good year. Holy cow. I guess that's why they call it the blues. Elton John. Shebop, Cyndi Lauper. Borderline, Madonna. Sunglasses at Night, Corey Hart. I'll just do the top 50. Eyes Without a Face, Billy Idol. Here Comes the Rain Again, Eurythmics. Uptown Girl, Billy Joel. That was a song for one of our dance recitals. Sister Christian, I used to sing that to some of the nuns in middle school and get in trouble. Night Ranger, Drive the Cars, Twist of Fate, Olivia Newton-John. Union of a Swirly Swirl, Duran Duran. Heart of Rock and Roll, Huey Lewis and the News. Hard Habit to Break, Chicago. The Warrior, Scandal. If You're in My Arms Again, Peebo Bryson. Automatic by the Pointer Sisters. Let the Music Play. That's by Shannon. I would have guessed that was Sheila E. too. To All the Girls I've Loved Before, Julio Iglesias and Willie Nelson. It still gets better, though. Caribbean Queen, Billy Ocean. That's All, Genesis. Running with the Night, Lionel Richie. Sad Songs Say So Much, Elton John. I Want a New Drug, Huey Lewis and the News. And so the rest of them are on there too. Yeah, that's it. Get in, you know, let me, I'm the sleep duster here. Good night. I want to thank everybody who reviewed the show on Apple Podcasts. Mattatel, boyfriend, love this podcast. Got me through many nights, with a lot of stuff. It's great when I wake up from stuff that wakes me up, helps me back to reality, and then pours me back to sleep. Scoots can be funny at times with his dry humor, which puts me in a pleasant mood to fall asleep. So thank you for that. This is from Crafting Pfeiffer. It was one of my favorite rom-cons of 1994, Crafting Pfeiffer. It was one of those, you know, Pygmalion tales or whatever. The Best Yawns. I think it was Michael, I can't remember who starred in that. I think the same Dr. McDreamy or whatever was in Crafting Pfeiffer. But then he was in a parental role. It was a, you know, reinvention of maybe a new take, slightly different take. Anyway, The Best Yawns from Crafting Pfeiffer, the reviewer, not the movie. Oh, no, that was Crafting Piper, because that was the name of the young woman in the movie. Anyway, The Best Yawns. I've been a listener for over a year now. I have to admit that sleeping with Scoots has changed my life. My brain doesn't have its own off switch, and having Scooter in my ears does the magic I need to fall asleep. I've been a patron for a while now and would happily continue to be one, if only for the comforting chair episode. If regular sleep with me doesn't do it, comforting chair always does. Thanks for the sleep, Scooter. Thanks, Crafting. How about this one? Speaking of filmmaking, this is from Francis Autour. Love it, but find the style of story that works best for you. I've been using sleep with me for a few weeks, a few times a week for a couple of years, and I'm also a patron. 95% of the time works great for me, but I found some genres of episodes work better than the others. For example, the TV recaps put me out right away, yeah, but the ones recorded outside do not, so I avoid them. So when Scoot says sometimes it takes a few times to work, for me that means finding the style of episodes that works better for you. UGGY says so good. Before this, I never really wanted to go to sleep. I'd stay up most nights on my phone or playing games because it could average 4 to 5 hours of sleep a night and feel fine until it hit, you know, until it caught up with me, and then I'd sleep for a while. This pattern didn't work for me until this podcast came around. I had no motive to sleep as I wanted to make the most of my awake time. Thank you. Thank you, Y. That's a great review, actually. Kind of exposes a different way I can relate to say, oh, I'm not going, you know, I got other stuff to do. This one says, huh, 3 stars. We don't really get 3-star reviews often. This is from Hey. It's S to the H, who says the story is nice, but the voice could be a little smoother, in my opinion. That's a balanced way to say it. I love what he's doing what he loves, though. Thanks, Sam. Yeah, these are creaky dulcets. There are smooth voice podcasts. Unfortunately, that's not my territory. Maddie Zeb 247 says 100% works. I always fall asleep before the intro, and so they're from the UK. Thank you, Maddie Zeb. Gus C says nap fuel. My entire life I had trouble napping, but to my amazement, this podcast puts me straight to sleep. And most other sleep aid audio seem to focus on techniques of relaxation, breathing, etc. And those types don't work that well for me. But this podcast gets to the heart of the issue, the mind. Instead of trying to relax your body, it creates a drone to lull, confuse you, and subdue your monkey mind. Give it a try, 2 or 3, says Gus. And finally, Travel Bug 006006 says, this really works. At first, I was skeptical, but it works every time. I'm asleep within minutes. So that's everybody. Thank you so much for reviewing the show over on Apple Podcasts. You can do that within your Apple Podcasts app on your phone or on iTunes on your desktop. And I really appreciate everybody does. You can also, if you say, well, Scoot, I already wrote a review, you can actually check whether reviews are useful or not. And that's helpful, especially getting some of the more newer reviews up, because some people see it in the reviews that are most popular are kind of older. Or if a review is just written, you know, people can write negative reviews, but sometimes people write them and it's unrelated to the kind, you know, it's just their knee was, you know, JRKing without actually listening to the whole episode or understanding it. They just said, well, let me listen to this, and oh boy, it was dissonant from what I expected immediately, and I'm not, you know, so you could say, oh, that review really isn't helpful. Where this negative review is actually helpful, you know, whatever you wish. But thank you for everybody for doing that. Sleep with Me is a listener-supported show. Listeners support the show directly on Patreon by spreading the word and other means. And they also, by supporting the sponsors, you're directly supporting the show. So thanks to everybody that does that, makes that possible. Remember, Night Vale Presents, you can find all the amazing shows they do. Lots of new stuff happening over at nightvalepresents.com. And what else? Night Vale Presents. My mind just went a little fuzzy-wuzzy on me. And, remember PRX, PRX.org. You can check out everything they're doing there. And next, here, let me tuck you in a little bit. Air you out. Yeah, get some fresh air. Let me open that window a little smidge or close it. Okay, consider it done. And if you need me, I'll be here. I got 299 other episodes waiting in the queue for you. Good night. All right, everybody, this is Scooter. This is Weeks in Review. And this is where I run through my Weeks in Review stuff. What was on Sleep With Me Plus in the past month. And what you can expect to see on... in the public feed too. Now I have, if you sign up for Sleep With Me Plus, or you're already signed up for Sleep With Me Plus, I highly recommend using a podcast app that allows search within the feeds, but using just one podcast app for Sleep With Me Plus content only. And then keeping your other podcasts, your daytime podcasts, in whatever app you use now. And I would just check out a couple podcast apps you could choose from on Apple are Overcasts, iCatcher, Pocket Casts. And on Android, you could try out Pocket Casts or Podcast Addict. For this example, I have the only thing I have in my app is the Boyfriends level. I have four podcasts, the ad-free full episodes, the story only episodes. Nothing in Sleep With Me Plus has ads except for the really old episodes in the archives. We got the story only versions of the show, the all intro, all night versions of the show, and then the bonus episodes. So let's start with the bonus episodes, actually. So Saturday, a new Posty episode came out. It was one that Russell loved, and that came out. And that's in the bonus feed. You know, some people like listening to the Posty Super Deluxe episodes during the day. Some people sleep to them. And, yeah, so that one is in the bonus feed. And then looks like we got a bonus coming out for Boar Besties and Boar Friends on Thursday of this week, which is April 15th when I'm recording this. And then we have another Posty Super Deluxe came out a couple weeks ago. That was a picnic lunch with Scooter. And that's in the bonus feed. And that makes just so much easier for those of you that don't like automate your playlist or anything, just to kind of build and choose how you want to listen. That's popping the all intro, all night episodes. I know an all-intro episode is coming out this Thursday. Last Thursday was Make Great Pets Season 1 Part 2, almost 6 hours. It's about the max length we can get and have a good file size. So that was like 7 episodes of Make Great Pets. April 3rd, an all-intro episode came out. And then we had... March is at bonus episodes. So there was another all intro episode. So that's in the all intro all night feed. And again, like so much easier, like these all intros. Is that what everything that's in there? 277 episodes split between all. So if you love all intros, I bet 200 of those are all intros, maybe even more. And then in the store, both in the story only episode feed and then in the all ad free feed. Let's run through the new episodes. Bring It On Week started last week. So we had 12:54 was our first watch along where I watched half of the movie Bring It On. Wednesday was 12:53, Ben Broughton, the Crayon Rambler. That was one of those episodes that had an intro that I said I should make an episode based on this intro. Went to make an episode based on the intro, and it went in an even another direction of what if there was an RPG game based on the movie Bring It On, which led me to figure out I never watched Bring It On. Let me learn more. Then I ended up watching Bring It On. Then April 7th was Alba Sabelix, we're getting ready, big announcement if I haven't made it anywhere. We're going to do 3 seasons of a crossover with Alba Salix. So that's cool. So that's something we're looking forward to doing. And that was episode 1 of that. That was the one we did originally. Then 12:52 was the finale of The Great British Bake Off and episode 10. Then Multiplex 5, Tiki Transistor Hut, that was a good one. 12:50, one of my favorite episodes, probably in the past few years, a Willy Wonka tour that came out of some news articles about the experience. And I said, this has got to be an episode. And that will be a series, a recurring thing. Then Great British Bake Off, episode 9, Patissier. And Multiplex episode 4, And then we're back to our last audio news. So it's everything. Again, if you ever need support, support@supercast.com is there to help you. So if you're listening to this episode, I'm assuming you're not like you don't need support. But if you do, and the other thing is like, yeah, these this is my main way to communicate. I learned this on Patreon. Most people just don't read their emails from Supercast or from me, or and most people aren't on our Discord or follow our social media. And so these messages are how the majority of supporters get their information. I do it in a sleepy voice because there's like, I put it in the, at the end of the free show too. But this is a kind of key way, but these episodes are easy to skip, especially if you're just using one podcast app, right? And building your playlists from that podcast app. So yeah, thanks everybody for supporting the show. Reach out if you have any feedback, feedback@sleepwithmepodcast.com. If you need support, support@supercast.com. And good night.